The July 4th date was a date, obviously, where a new thought form was incarnated into the world and signed in a document and imprinted into the human psyche. That's not a day. That is a psyche birth force, July 4th.
Franklin was one of the people who helped commission the Great Seal of the United States of America. And it's very telling that they settled upon a very occult-looking symbol, this eye hovering above a pyramid, which suggests that our worldly success is incomplete without some kind of inner vision.
This is New World Radio. A holistic worldview of current events and popular culture. With your host, the Reverend Laura Barrett Bennett, and weekly guest, Christopher Naughton. New World Radio starts now.
This week, Americans celebrate the 4th of July. Other than the obvious, what does July 4th mean to the American psyche? What about the intriguing synchronicities that swirl around the date itself? Does it provide a glimpse into the American soul and the authentic spiritual roots of our nation? This is New World Radio. I'm Christopher Naughton and joined by Laura Barrett Bennett, the third generation Unity minister and the former chair of biblical studies at Unity School of Christianity in Unity Village, Missouri. And Laura, today we're telling July 4th stories.
Yes, we are. And what a great thing to do, because as we go into the July 4th weekend, we do get that sense of spirituality or religion with our own civil organization and its unfolding.
Yeah, and there may actually be a pop quiz or two today. I know you're excited by that.
Oh, boy.
So how appropriate that we would ask Mitch Horowitz to join us again in this conversation. He is the author of the book Occult America, The Secret History of How Mysticism Shaped Our Nation. He's also the editor-in-chief of Torture Penguin Publishing and Books, a well-known voice on the history of the nation and the impact of alternative spirituality. We've heard him on CBS Sunday Morning, Dateline NBC, All Things Considered, and you can visit him online at MitchHorowitz.com. Mitch, you'll also be here in Virginia Beach in October, will you not?
That's right. I'm going to be speaking at ARE as part of the Ancient Mysteries Conference from October 8th to October 11th. I'll be giving a couple of talks, and I just love ARE, so I look forward to meeting some of your listeners there.
Well, let's go ahead and start in Virginia Beach, which I think last time we dispositively proved was the center of the spiritual universe.
That's my perspective.
I'm glad you've come over to our side, next to New York, of course. But, you drive across town here, and Pat Robertson's Christian Broadcasting Network has a four-star hotel called the Founders Inn, and they all have busts of the major founding fathers. And I can't help myself sometimes. I drive past and I'll look at one bust and I'll say deist, Unitarian, Freemason, question mark, that sort of thing. Is this phenomenon just about who we all are, that we all would like to co-opt the founding fathers? We want to create them in our own spiritual image.
Well, I think you raise a wonderful point. I mean, certainly we do like to always look backwards to affirm the ideas and the values that we hold in the present. But you've really hit upon an important point. The founding fathers were drinking very, very deeply from different spiritual traditions, ranging from Freemasonry to deism. There was an influence of occult Renaissance spirituality in some of the ideas that were beloved among some of the founding fathers. I want us to get more comfortable with words like occult and esoteric, because they don't mean something sinister. They really are a part of our past that we need to come to terms with in a positive way. So you have figures like George Washington, Ben Franklin, John Hancock. All of these guys were Freemasons. That was an esoteric religious influence coming from Europe to America. And at the heart of it, at the time, Freemasonry believed in ecumenism, in welcoming people of different faiths within one organization. It was a radical idea, but today it's mainstream American civics.
Oh, one of the things I've noticed about the spirituality of our founding fathers is how individualized it was to each individual founding father. And in a sense, that is what our country was based on, was the individual seeking their fulfillment, seeking their path. And I would say we probably have as many forms of spirituality and religion in this country as we do people.
That's true. And interestingly enough, that's been true for a very long time, going way back to the colonial days of this country, even in the 1600s. Our nation at least in its colonial form at that time, was a very liberal place for different kinds of spiritual and religious experiments relative to Europe. People came here to start religious experiments, to found religious communities, to start mystical communities. This really goes way back to the history of Philadelphia in the early 1680s. People of different religious faiths started gathering around the Philadelphia area very early on. They were fleeing persecution in Europe. So America has always been a great laboratory for religious experiments.
And I think John Meacham, we have a clip here, he gave a talk at the National Constitution Center not that long ago about, and this harkens to what you were talking about, Laura, that all of these men and women were individuals. They had individual faiths. And what I think is interesting, and listen to John Meacham, they really couldn't be pigeonholed.
Washington is like Jefferson in that, and I don't know about you all, but he's a lot like me in that he could be absolutely convinced of the truth of an idea 1 hour, and then the next hour think, what the hell was I thinking, to some extent. He was a vestryman. He went to the Episcopal Church. His wife, Martha, was a very devout woman, read sermons, God help her. And yet, Washington in his public statements always spoke in very broad deist terms, very rarely mentioned Jesus, and I think had a very broad, would not kneel to pray, and was a figure who, like Jefferson, was moved from belief to belief in a way that made him, I think, cherish liberty even more because he needed it himself as he moved around.
What I find interesting, Mitch, is that many of our founding fathers were moving targets. They could not be pigeonholed. They allowed themselves to change their minds as they move forward. And, you know, when you think about some of the greatest minds, that's something that they seem to hold in common. They really can't be put into a box.
That's right. You just simply can't define these people through labels or partisan thinking. George Washington was an incredibly fluid thinker. He was a real genius and visionary. It's easy to see a figure like Washington as just this face that stares out at us from Mount Rushmore or the $1 bill, but in many ways, Washington was a religious genius. In the first term of his presidency, he wrote about how we as Americans shouldn't just rely upon the term tolerance when talking about minority religions, because tolerance implies that one group of people is bestowing rights upon another group of people. He made a point of saying that minority religions were actually full members at the table mm-hmm. of the United States. He wrote this to members of a synagogue in Rhode Island during his first term of office. Washington had a real vision of religious inclusion that was just generations ahead of its time.
It's an incredible thing to actually recognize that insight that was part of our founding country was to allow that freedom for people to think individually. I know there must have been as there is today a sense of dichotomy in understanding that, because while individual spiritual paths were recognized, there's also innate in somebody seeking out spirituality, there's an innate longing to belong to something greater than yourself. And in a sense, you have to give up some of your individuality for that. So I think our founding fathers came together and belonged to a cause that became a civil cause that was greater than their spirituality, but the sum total of the whole.
And, you know, interestingly enough, the founding fathers, again, you know, we lose sight of their individuality because they seem like these great figures looking down on us from afar. But Washington was actually very aware of some of the different alternative spiritual currents going on in Europe and in the early United States. He has letters where he wrote about the work of a European channeler or spiritual healer named Franz Anton Mesmer, mm-hmm. Who was associated with
yes.
a philosophy called mesmerism, which today
yes.
we call hypnotism. And lots of folks who are interested in Edgar Cayce have probably heard of Mesmer and mesmerism as sort of an early method of going into a trance state and receiving some sort of anomalous information from somewhere, maybe some kind of a psychical state. This was spilling over from Europe into the United States in a very significant way in the late 1700s, early 1800s. Benjamin Franklin was very aware of Mesmer, and he was a critic of him. Washington was very aware of Mesmer because his friend, the French Revolutionary War hero, the Marquis de Lafayette.
Is that Jefferson you're referring to? I'm sorry, Mitch, is that Jefferson you're referring to there or Washington again?
Washington okay. himself. Washington was close friends with the Marquis de Lafayette, yes. who was a hero in our own Revolutionary War, and the Marquis de Lafayette was a big admirer of Mesmer. I mean, just wrote about him in glowing terms, and he wrote about Mesmer to Washington. Washington responded to him. The two conversed about it. So it's interesting. You know, you look at these figures, and it's easy to lose sight of them as individuals. They really were involved with all the different spiritual currents of their time.
I'm wondering, however, if we can get a scorecard out here, because perhaps it's the ego that likes to have winners and losers, but I would like us to at least come down and maybe assess the kind of mindset and the kind of spiritual mindset that they had. Let's actually listen to a short clip here from Peter Rodriguez, again at the National Constitution Center, and here he talks about Washington.
Find consolation in religion, yes, but not his own feeling. When you look at Washington's own death, the lack of religious context is pretty striking. There's no religious words. There's no prayer. There's no asking for forgiveness. There's no farewell message, no hope of meeting in heaven, no call for a minister, even though there was plenty of time to do it. Many clergymen wrote at the time that they doubted Washington's Christianity. There are four or five people that I could quote to you, and indeed, at the end of his term, they tried to write a letter to get him to publicly acknowledge this. He skipped over that part. Jefferson referred to him as the sly fox, didn't answer the question that they asked him. Washington, from the Revolutionary War on, I think the evidence indicates that he never took communion, another strong thing that normally Christians would do. He'll occasionally write almost as an outsider to the faith in his letters to Lafayette, where he talks about, I'll give Christians that way to heaven that to them shall seem the easiest. Washington often refers to Providence in this way. Providence, which is his most common name for God, that's not a biblical term.
And so as I listen to that, someone's an evangelical and says that, you know, the founding fathers are Christians and this is a Christian nation, or atheists would say that our founders had little or nothing to do with God. I would have to think that they would strike out on those particular notions, and that if you had to pick, if push came to shove, they really were more from the deistic, Unitarian, Freemason side of the ledger.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think if actually one wants to get a handle on the religious thinking of a George Washington or Ben Franklin or Thomas Jefferson, read Ralph Waldo Emerson, read The Transcendentalist, because I think the way of thought of the Founding Fathers reemerged in the 19th century in the writings of The Transcendentalist, which could also be described pretty much along the lines of what you were just saying. Go to Emerson, go to Thoreau, and I think you'll see there the spirit of what the Founding Fathers thought about God and existence.
And perhaps the claim that they had little or no God, perhaps it was just God as God was already defined by religions that had preceded them. Perhaps their God was a greater sense of spirituality and spiritual presence that allowed the freedom for different ways to approach that presence.
Yes. And I think the wonderful thing in that passage that we just heard played is the reference to Washington being unwilling to answer as to the notion of his religion. He couldn't answer. Jefferson called him a sly fox. But some of the people with the deepest spiritual questions and the most authentic spiritual search in our country today, in the 21st century, are those very same folks who can't answer. Not necessarily because they're sly foxes, but because they really don't fit into any one particular box or another. They're searchers of the most authentic kind.
Then maybe Stephen Waldman, who's the editor-in-chief of BeliefNet, has it right, that America owes its religious freedoms to men and women with unorthodox views of God.
That's right. I mean, really, America, and I'm speaking way back, the American colonies, by the late 1600s, already were known as a safe haven for people who were fleeing wars and repression on the European continent. A whole flow of people from Europe who were involved in mystical and occult movements fled to the American colonies starting in the mid-1600s. There was a war that tore through Central Europe called the 30 Years' War, and it really reversed decades of religious liberalism in Europe, particularly in Central Europe, where you had a lot of people who were experimenting with alchemy, Christian mysticism, astrology, various forms of prophecy and divination. These people found their homeland of Central Europe really devastated in the wake of the 30 Years' War, and many of them fled to America. Thankfully, among our founders were people like William Penn, who was a British Quaker, who was a very well-connected man from an aristocratic family, and he had a vision of founding a great town or a great city where people of all different religious faiths could congregate together peacefully and successfully, and that became Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. And from there, this spirit of religious openness, religious innovation spread out across America. So it was part of it's in the DNA of our country.
Hey, Mitch, let's look at actually a couple of the individual founding fathers and see what kind of enigmas they were, especially when it came to their spirituality. Let's take a Ben Franklin. Okay, so Franklin went to church almost all the time. He appreciated the evangelizing of George Whitefield. When the Continental Congress almost didn't get off the ground, he stood there and said, "In the days of the Revolution, we prayed to our great father. Have we forgotten this great friend?" And he had a Bible he used to keep in his drawer, and he used to have a little notes in the margins. But here's a guy who believed in reincarnation, questioned the divinity of Jesus. He published books for a mystical community in Ephrata, and touted astrology for Richard's Almanac. So yes, we're talking about an enigma wrapped in a contradiction.
Yeah, and wonderfully so. You know, who could pin a label on Benjamin Franklin? Somebody I know refers to him as an American Merlin. You know, it's a wonderful title. Who could pin a label on him? And yet, at the same time, he could also be very sharply critical of certain trends in the spiritual culture. Franklin was on a committee that was convened by the French government to study the work of the man I mentioned earlier, Franz Anton Mesmer. And rightly or wrongly, Franklin came down as a very sharp critic of Mesmer. He believed Mesmer was a fraud. I don't know if he retained that belief throughout his life, but he was very critical of him in the report that he helped conceive and write for the French government. At the same time, Franklin was religiously liberal in all kinds of ways. He was a committed Freemason. He and George Washington are probably the two best-known Freemasons among the American founders, and there are others like Paul Revere and John Hancock. Franklin was one of the people who helped commission the Great Seal of the United States of America, that mysterious iron pyramid that appears on the back of our dollar bill. That symbol is not taken directly from Freemasonry, but I believe it's inspired by Freemasonry, and it heralds the coming of a new order of the ages, by which Franklin meant a new era in religious liberty and education and a kind of national comity in which you had neighbor helping neighbor. This was a very positive, very idealistic idea in the mind of Franklin and the other founding fathers. And it's very telling that eventually they settled upon a very occult-looking symbol to embody these ideals, this eye hovering above a pyramid, which suggests that our worldly success is incomplete without some kind of inner knowing, inner vision. And Franklin and other founding fathers were also very attached to the symbols of ancient Egypt. They were working off of Freemasonic symbolism, and they were also working with a Renaissance occult idea that there was one primeval religion that predated all the others, and many Renaissance religious thinkers located that in ancient Egypt. So Franklin was a product of some of the most radical thought currents coming out of the Reformation. He was just a wonderful broad thinking person, and he couldn't be pinned down.
What about Jefferson? How do you see him, again, from a spiritual standpoint, Mitch?
Again, a very liberal religious thinker. You know, Jefferson doubted a lot of the stories and historical data that appear in Scripture. He believed that that portion of Scripture that had validity centered on the words of Christ. So he foresaw a kind of new Scripture that would center strictly on the Gospels. And he was a doubter of Scripture as a guide to history or to human ethics, at least in all of its folds. He believed chiefly in the words of Christ and felt that the other areas of Scripture were, at the very least, open to question.
And he believed in the words of Christ at a moral level, like it's a morality to live by.
Yes.
Versus the life of Christ is something to believe in to be saved. So it was a different kind of approach to
Yes.
Christ.
Yes.
And John Adams, you have to love this one quote, or at least be amused by it, when he said that his disdain for Calvinists was only outstripped by his disdain for Catholics.
There's John Adams for you.
Yes.
Never a dull moment with John Adams. You know, the interesting thing was, in this country, and I'm sure that a number of your listeners are already hearkening to this, we were a nation that was in the process of destroying the civilization of the Native Americans. We were a nation that was that began importing slaves early in the 1600s. There was a lot of coarseness and a lot of prejudice and violence in early America. There's no question about it. And the prejudice against Catholics that Adams voiced was pretty common. At the same time, America is just filled with contradictions. At the same time as you had those kinds of attitudes and those kinds of actions going on, you continue to have the development of a very religiously liberal nation. Prejudices and openness existed side by side in this country, and perhaps still do.
Coming up, let's talk about the July 4th date itself. Are there interesting and intriguing synchronicities about that day that speak volumes of our nation's spiritual heritage and destiny? More with Mitch Horowitz when we return.
Looks like the 4th of July.